Whispers from the Dark, Season 2, Episode 2 with Raven Vale. Derinkuyu, the underground city built to hide from something. There is a moment when descending underground, when sound changes. It's not gradual, it's sudden. A threshold you cross. One step you hear the world normally. The next step, everything is different. Footsteps stop echoing the way they should. They sound muffled, absorbed, as if the stone is drinking at the sound. Your breathing becomes louder than the world around you, becomes the dominant sound. In, out, you become aware of your heartbeat, can hear blood moving through your ears, and the air itself feels older, not stale. You'd expect stale air underground. This is different, like you're inhaling something that hasn't moved in centuries. Air that has been trapped and recycled and breathed by people long dead. Air that remembers. In the heart of modern-day Turkey, beneath ordinary homes and quiet streets, beneath families eating dinner and children playing in courtyards, beneath people living normal lives, completely unaware of what lies below their feet, there is a doorway that leads straight down. Not into a basement, not into a cellar, not into some forgotten wine storage or medieval foundation, but into a city. A complete city, with streets and rooms and gathering places and infrastructure, all underground, all carved from solid rock, all designed with one purpose, to make human beings vanish from the surface world. A city carved entirely underground, layer after layer after layer, descending into darkness that predates written history. Staircases that spiral downward until your sense of direction collapses, until up and down lose meaning, until you can no longer tell if you're moving deeper or simply walking in circles. Doorways that grow narrower the deeper you go. Ceilings that force you to crouch. Passageways designed to slow movement, to funnel traffic, to create choke points. Rooms designed not for comfort, but for survival. Spaces carved with singular purpose. No decoration. No art. No beauty. Only function. Only necessity. Thousands of people once lived there. Not hundreds. Thousands. Entire families. Multiple generations. Grandparents who remembered the surface. Parents who'd been born both above and below ground. Children born in darkness, who might never see the sun, never feel rain, never see stars, never experience wind or seasons or the natural rhythm of day and night, for months at a time. Some records suggest years. Some archaeological evidence suggests even longer. Entire lifetimes, perhaps, for those born in the deepest levels during times when the threat above was most severe. Without sunlight, without fresh air from the surface, without knowing if they would ever emerge again, without knowing if the surface world still existed as they remembered it, or if whatever had driven them below had transformed it into something unrecognizable. And the question that still hangs over Derinkuyu, after centuries of study, after decades of archaeological investigation, after every attempt to explain it rationally, is not how it was built. It's why. Because this wasn't a place built to hide from armies. This wasn't a fortress against invasion. This wasn't a shelter from weather or famine. It was built to disappear from something. Something that could find you on the surface. Something that made hiding hundreds of feet underground in darkness and silence and constant fear feel safer than staying in the open world. This is Whispers from the Dark. Season 2. I'm Raven Vale. Tonight we descend into Derinkuyu, the underground city built to hide from something that ancient people believed was real, and possibly still is. Derinkuyu is located in the Cappadocia region of Turkey, an area already famous for its strange rock formations and ancient cave dwellings. Volcanic stone carved by wind and time into shapes that look almost deliberate, almost designed. The landscape itself feels alien. Towers of stone rising from flat plains, valleys that wind through rock like veins, cave openings that stare out like eyes. But Derinkuyu is different. It isn't a cave. It isn't a natural formation adapted for human use. It's an engineered city, deliberately planned, methodically carved, constructed with intention and desperate purpose. Discovered accidentally in 1963, when a homeowner in the village of Derinkuyu knocked down a wall during renovations and uncovered a passageway descending into darkness. Not a small opening. A passage, wide enough to walk through. Stone-carved steps leading down at an angle designed for traffic, for movement of goods, for evacuation, for descent carrying children or supplies or whatever you needed to survive below. The homeowner's name was never widely recorded, just another resident doing maintenance on an old house. He thought he'd found a storage room, maybe an old cellar. Instead, he found the edge of something vast. He reported it to authorities, though some accounts suggest he initially considered sealing it back up, covering it, pretending he'd never seen it, as if some instinct warned him that certain doors should stay closed. Archaeologists arrived within days. They brought lights, ropes, surveying equipment, cameras. They were excited. Cappadocia was already known for underground dwellings, small cave homes, wine cellars carved into soft volcanic rock. They expected to find something modest, perhaps a basement that connected to other basements, maybe even a small network. Nothing prepared them for what they actually discovered. They descended. First 5 feet, then 10, then 20. The passage kept going, leveling out, opening into a chamber. Then another passage. Then more chambers. Then staircases leading deeper. More passages, more rooms. The initial survey team spent 3 hours below and barely scratched the surface. When they emerged, they were silent. Shaken. Not by what they'd found exactly, but by the scale of it. By the realization that they were standing on top of something that fundamentally changed their understanding of ancient Anatolia. What archaeologists found below stunned the archaeological world. Not just Turkey. The world. A massive underground complex descending over 280 feet into the earth. To put that in perspective, that's nearly the height of the Statue of Liberty. That's a 28-story building, inverted, plunging down instead of rising up. But unlike a building with floors stacked uniformly, Derinkuyu is organic in its descent, irregular, levels at different depths, some only 15 feet down, others 50 feet below the one above. The deepest explored chamber sits 280 feet beneath the surface, but there are sealed shafts that descend further. How much further? No one knows. At least 18 levels deep that have been mapped and documented. 18 distinct layers of civilization, each with its own purpose, its own infrastructure, its own defensive capabilities. But there are indications of more, always more. Sealed passages that clearly once led somewhere, collapsed tunnels that hint at deeper structures, ventilation shafts that descend past the deepest explored level and continue into unmapped darkness below. Ground-penetrating radar shows voids at depths archaeologists haven't reached, chambers that exist on scans but haven't been physically accessed. The official maps show 18 levels. The reality may be far deeper, capable of housing 20,000 people. 20,000. That's not an estimate. That's based on square footage, resource allocation, sleeping quarters, and the capacity of the water and food storage systems. Not in cramped, desperate conditions where every inch is utilized, but with infrastructure, with organization, with planning for what researchers call sustainable long-term habitation. The city included livestock pens for animals brought below ground, wells tapping aquifers deep in the volcanic rock, schools where children learned to read and write and calculate even while living in perpetual darkness, churches where people worshipped and prayed and tried to maintain faith that they would someday return to the surface, meeting halls for governance and decision-making, kitchens equipped with sophisticated ventilation systems that drew smoke up and out without betraying the city's location, wine presses for producing alcohol, both as sustenance and possibly as medicine, oil presses for producing cooking fuel and lamp oil, and burial chambers for those who died below and could not be brought to the surface for proper burial, full chambers dedicated to the dead, not hasty graves, proper burial spaces, with provisions for ritual, for remembrance, for maintaining dignity even in death underground, not temporary shelter, not emergency refuge, a city designed for extended occupation, for survival measured not in days or weeks, but in seasons, perhaps years. Over 200 underground cities have been discovered in Cappadocia. 200. Not caves adapted for shelter. Not natural formations with some human modification. 200 deliberately constructed underground cities, many connected by tunnels stretching for miles beneath the surface. Networks linking population centers that never saw daylight. Subterranean highways carved through solid rock. Some tunnels are wide enough for two people to walk side by side. Others force single-file movement. Some are perfectly straight. Others wind and turn deliberately, creating paths that would be impossible to navigate without knowledge, without maps, without guidance from those who knew the way. Tunnels that connected cities separated by dozens of miles on the surface. Why? Why create underground highways? Why link the cities? What did they gain by connection that individual cities couldn't provide? What threat required coordinated response across a network of underground population centers? But Derinkuyu is the deepest, the most complex, the most elaborately defensive, and the most unsettling, because everything about its design suggests fear, not caution. Not prudent defense against known threats. Fear. Primal. Desperate. Existential fear. Derinkuyu was not built for comfort. Every design choice sacrifices convenience for security. Sacrifices ease for concealment. Ceilings are low. Unusually low. Even accounting for the fact that ancient people were generally shorter, the ceilings in many passages force adults to crouch, to bend, to move slowly and awkwardly. This isn't accidental, it's intentional. Low ceilings prevent running, prevent carrying large weapons, prevent any kind of swift, coordinated assault. Passageways force movement into single file, narrow corridors that only allow one person to pass at a time. Turns designed so you can't see what's ahead. Blind corners, sudden drops, steps that appear without warning in dim light. Ventilation shafts double as death traps, narrow vertical shafts plunging between levels, wide enough to provide air circulation, not wide enough for human passage, or so you'd think. But some are just barely passable by a determined person. And each one could be blocked from below, sealed with stone, filled with debris, turned into a tomb for anyone foolish enough to attempt descent. Massive rolling stone doors, weighing up to a ton each, were positioned at key choke points throughout the city. Not at every passage. That would be impractical. But at strategic locations, places where a single sealed door could isolate entire sections, carved from single pieces of volcanic rock, which is remarkable given that volcanic rock is relatively soft and prone to fracturing. These weren't cobbled together from multiple pieces. Each door was a single carved stone, circular, like millstones, between 5 and 6 feet in diameter, several inches thick, solid rock weighing anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 pounds. But vertical, not horizontal like a millstone, fitted into grooves carved into the floor and ceiling, precision grooves that required exact measurements. The engineering is sophisticated. The door had to be heavy enough that it couldn't be easily moved once in place, but not so heavy that it couldn't be moved at all. It had to roll smoothly in its groove, which meant the groove had to be perfectly aligned, and the door's edge had to be perfectly circular. Any deviation would cause binding, would make the door impossible to move. These doors could only be opened from the inside. The mechanisms, the grooves for leverage, the handles or holes for pushing, all positioned on the interior side. Deliberately, intentionally. Once sealed, they rendered entire levels inaccessible. Not barricaded, which implies something temporary. Not blocked, which suggests it could be unblocked. Entombed, sealed as completely as a tomb. Anyone on the wrong side when the door closed stayed there. No mechanism to open from the outside. No hinges to break. No lock to pick. Just a ton of stone sitting in a groove, and all the force needed to move it accessible only from one side. Each level was designed with independent defenses, so that if invaders breached one section, the rest of the city could be sealed off instantly. The infection could be contained. The compromise isolated. Entire levels sacrificed to save the rest. There are no grand plazas, no open gathering spaces where communities could assemble, no decorative elements to lift the spirit, no mosaics, no carved reliefs, no art beyond the functional. This is not a city built to live in. It is a city built to survive in, to hide in, to disappear into, and more importantly, to remain hidden. The entrance was designed to be concealed, disguised, easy to miss even if you knew it existed. Entire sections of the city had no direct access to the surface. You had to pass through other sections, through controlled checkpoints, through defensible passages. The official explanation for Derinkuyu is simple and reassuring. Ancient people hid underground to escape invading armies, persecuted Christians fleeing Roman authorities, early believers hiding from persecution, communities seeking refuge from raids. It makes sense. It's rational. It fits our understanding of human conflict and historical patterns. But that explanation collapses under scrutiny. It doesn't hold up when you examine the evidence. When you actually think about what this city represents. Armies don't require cities to hide underground for months at a time. Armies pass through. They raid, they occupy, they extract tribute, they leave. Hiding for a few days makes sense, maybe a week. But infrastructure for months, for indefinite periods, that's not hiding from an army. That's hiding from something persistent. Something that doesn't leave. Armies don't justify building hundreds of interconnected subterranean complexes across an entire region. One underground refuge, maybe. A few scattered hideouts, sure. But 200 cities, connected by miles of tunnels. That's not a response to occasional raids. That's systematic. That's civilization-wide adaptation to sustained threat. Armies don't explain why people would bring livestock underground. Sheep, goats, even cattle in some chambers. The logistics alone are staggering. Getting animals down narrow passages, feeding them, managing waste, dealing with disease in confined spaces. You don't do that for a 3-day siege. You do that when you need sustainable food sources for extended periods. Why plan for long-term food storage, not emergency rations? Storage rooms, multiple storage rooms per level, grain storage, oil storage, wine storage, food preservation areas. This is planning for seasons, for harvest cycles, for extended survival. Why design air systems capable of sustaining life far below the surface? The ventilation shafts aren't simple holes. They're engineered, precisely angled, connected in ways that create air circulation even at the deepest levels. Some shafts descend through all 18 known levels. That's advanced understanding of airflow and pressure. That's not thrown together in panic. That's designed by people who knew they'd need to breathe down there for a very long time. Why were children born underground? We know this because burial chambers exist on lower levels, small chambers, for small bodies. Children who never saw the surface, who lived their entire brief lives in darkness and died there. You don't plan for that if you are hiding from an army for a few weeks. You plan for that when you're prepared for generations underground. Why include religious spaces, churches, chapels, sacred spaces carved with the same care as living quarters? Faith maintained in darkness, worship continued below. This suggests communities that expected to live full lives down there, to marry, to raise children, to die, all while hidden from the world above. Why were the cities used repeatedly over thousands of years? Archaeological evidence shows occupation in waves, periods of heavy use, periods of abandonment, then reoccupation, over and over. Different cultures, different time periods, different civilizations, but the same behavior, the same pattern. Hide underground, eventually emerge, eventually flee below again, as if the threat came and went, cycled, returned after periods of dormancy. And most importantly, armies don't explain why surface settlements were sometimes abandoned without evidence of battle. No siege equipment, no weapons, no bodies, no destruction, no burned buildings or shattered walls, just people gone. Homes left as if the inhabitants expected to return, food still on tables in some cases, as if hiding underground was the only option left, as if something appeared that made every person in a community flee below ground immediately, without fighting, without resistance, just gone. Derinkuyu's origins are officially dated to around 700 to 800 BCE, the Phrygian period. But many researchers believe that's only the most recent major phase of construction, that the city is far older. The deepest levels show signs of erosion inconsistent with known tool marks, wear patterns that don't match iron or bronze implements, smoothing that suggests water flow, or something else, something that acted on the stone differently than human tools. Ventilation shafts extend deeper than documented levels, much deeper, sealed from below, or collapsed, or deliberately blocked. When archaeologists have attempted to probe these shafts, they descend past the official lowest level and continue. Into what? No one knows. The shafts are too narrow for human exploration, too dangerous to excavate without risk of collapse. Some tunnels lead nowhere, dead ends that make no architectural sense, passages that were clearly intended to go somewhere, carved with purpose, then sealed. Not collapsed. Sealed. Deliberately filled with stone and rubble, blocked from the inside, as if whatever was beyond needed to stay beyond. Others end abruptly, as if sealed intentionally, mid-passage, mid-descent, walls constructed across formerly open tunnels, built hastily, not with the precision of the original construction, Emergency sealing, panic architecture, ancient texts from the region reference the world below long before known civilizations. Sumerian tablets, Hittite records, documents that predate the official founding of Derinkuyu by thousands of years. References to cities beneath cities, to peoples who fled below ground when the burning ones walked above, when the sky changed, when the watchers came. The Hittites, who dominated Anatolia from 1600 to 1200 BCE, left records of underground refuge, not as something new, but as something ancient, something their ancestors had built, something they maintained and expanded, but did not originate. The Phrygians, who came later, found the cities already existing, already ancient, already showing signs of age and wear. They expanded them, improved them, added their own levels, but they didn't create them. The earliest Anatolian cultures, people we know only through archaeology, through fragments and ruins, they all left behind references to beings that moved between worlds. Things that came from the sky. Things that emerged from the earth. Things that hunted openly until humans learned to hide. Ancient myths from Cappadocia describe a time when the surface world was unsafe. Not from other humans, not from natural disasters, but from something else, something other, when watchers walked openly, tall figures that moved silently across the land, that appeared without warning, that observed without speaking, that took people who were never seen again. When the night belonged to something else, when sunset was a warning, when people locked doors and covered windows and prayed for morning, when going out after dark meant disappearing, when entire villages learned to live in silence after the sun went down. Stories speak of tall beings that moved silently, impossibly tall, 7 feet, 8 feet, more, proportions slightly wrong, limbs too long, movements too smooth, no sound when they walked, no footfalls, no breathing, just silent presence. Shapes that could see in darkness, eyes that reflected light like animals, but not animal eyes, wrong color, wrong shape. Gaze that felt physical, that you could feel on your skin, that tracked movement through walls, through barriers, entities that hunted by sound, that could hear heartbeats, hear breathing, hear whispered prayers. Silence was survival. Movement meant death, stories of people holding their breath until they passed out. Families teaching children to breathe silently from birth. Entire populations learning to move without sound. Creatures that punished light. Fire drew them. Torches were beacons. Lanterns were invitations. Campfires meant annihilation. Early humans learned to live in darkness, to navigate by touch and memory, to do all their living in daylight hours and hide completely when the sun set. Legends say the earth itself was safer than the sky, that going underground meant going beyond their reach, that they couldn't follow, or wouldn't. That depth meant protection. That stone and soil created barriers they respected or couldn't cross. That going underground was not exile, but refuge, not punishment, not desperate last resort, but logical survival strategy, the smart choice, the choice that kept you alive. And Derinkuyu reflects that belief in stone. Every design choice supports it. Low ceilings that flying creatures couldn't navigate, narrow passages that large bodies couldn't enter, darkness that removed the advantage of superior vision, silence enforced by architecture, no echo chambers, no amplification, sound dampened by close quarters. What makes Derinkuyu unsettling is not just its size, not just its age, not just the mystery of its origins. It's how the space affects people, how it responds to presence, how it feels alive in ways stone shouldn't feel. People report disorientation, not just getting lost in the maze of passages, which is understandable given the complex layout, but losing sense of direction entirely, losing spatial awareness, forgetting which way is up, compasses spinning without settling, needles rotating continuously, digital displays showing impossible readings, north pointing toward what was south moments before. GPS signals place you miles from where you actually are, positioning systems showing you above ground when you're 200 feet below, or showing you at depths that don't match the official maps. Phones displaying coordinates that correspond to empty desert miles away. Time distortion. This is reported so consistently, it cannot be dismissed. Visitors spend what feels like 20 minutes exploring a single level and emerge to find hours have passed. 3 hours, 4 hours. Time they cannot account for, or the reverse. Hours below that feel like minutes. Entering at 2 p.m. and exiting at 6 p.m., but feeling certain only 30 minutes have elapsed. Watches that stop working at certain depths. Not because of battery failure. They work fine before descent. Stop at specific levels. Resume working at the surface. Phones that show wrong times. Not off by minutes. Off by hours. As if time moves differently down there. As if the deeper levels exist in a different temporal flow. Vertigo. Sudden, overwhelming vertigo in spaces that are perfectly level. The floor seems to tilt, or you seem to tilt. Your inner ear screams that you're falling, but your eyes say you're standing still. Nausea. Dizziness. The sensation that the walls are closing in or expanding outward. Sudden dread. Overwhelming, sourceless dread. Panic attacks in people who've never had them. The absolute certainty that something terrible is about to happen. Fight or flight response, triggered by nothing. By empty corridors and silent chambers. By stone and darkness and age. Electronics malfunction deep underground. Not just battery drain, which could be explained by temperature, or some electromagnetic property of the volcanic rock. Complete, inexplicable failure. Cameras stop working. Not battery dead. The entire device fails. Won't power on even with fresh batteries. Functions perfectly once brought back to the surface. Lights flicker and die. LED lights that shouldn't flicker. That have no filament to burn out. Just darkness. Sudden, complete darkness that lasts seconds or minutes, then returns as if nothing happened. Recording equipment captures static, or worse, captures sounds that weren't there. Researchers who review their audio recordings hear things they didn't hear during recording. Voices in empty chambers, distinct voices, sometimes whispered, sometimes conversational volume. Speaking languages no one recognizes. Footsteps in sealed sections. Clear footsteps. Multiple people walking. In areas where no one was walking. Where no one could have been walking. Breathing in spaces where no one breathes. Slow, rhythmic breathing. Amplified. As if recorded from inches away. But the microphone was mounted to a wall. In an empty room. Visitors experience panic without cause, not claustrophobia, different. People who aren't claustrophobic, people who've never experienced anxiety. Suddenly unable to continue, unable to breathe properly, heart racing, palms sweating, the overwhelming need to leave. Now, immediately, experienced spelunkers and cave explorers. People who've spent years underground in far more dangerous conditions, seized by irrational fear at specific depths, at specific locations, the need to get out, to get up, to reach the surface immediately, to breathe air that hasn't been trapped underground for millennia, to see sky, to feel sun, to be anywhere but here. Some visitors have panic attacks so severe they have to be escorted out, carried out, because their legs won't work, because they've curled into fetal positions and refuse to move deeper. Tour guides report this happens regularly, predictably, at certain spots in certain levels, as if the architecture itself triggers something primal, something survival-based, something that recognizes danger the conscious mind doesn't understand. Some report the sensation of being followed. Not by other tourists, not by guides, by something else. Presence behind you that vanishes when you turn. Footsteps that mirror your own. Shadow that moves independently of light. The feeling of being watched by something that doesn't want to be seen. Others describe hearing movement behind sealed walls, scratching, scraping. Something moving through passages that don't exist on any map, through sections that were sealed centuries ago, through spaces too small for human passage, but something moving nonetheless. And there are areas still closed to the public, sections marked off limits, not because they're structurally unstable. The official reason is always structural concern, but locals know better. They know these sections were closed because workers refused to enter them. Because people who went in came out changed. Because something about certain chambers makes even hardened archaeologists uncomfortable. Not because they're unstable, but because no one knows where the tunnels lead. Because some passages descend beyond mapped levels. Because ventilation shafts connect to chambers that shouldn't exist according to the official layout. Because sometimes, late at night, when the tourists are gone and the lights are off, the guards report hearing things from below, from the closed sections, from the dark. Derinkuyu is not alone. Similar underground refuges exist worldwide. Different continents, different cultures, different time periods, but the same behavior. The same architecture of fear. Malta's Hypogeum, a subterranean structure on Malta that descends three levels into limestone, carved around 3600 BCE. Older than the pyramids, older than Stonehenge, capable of holding thousands, with acoustic properties that shouldn't be possible with ancient tools, chambers that amplify certain frequencies while dampening others. Spaces where whispers carry hundreds of feet while shouts are muffled. Why? What were they listening for? What were they hiding from? China's underground cities. Massive subterranean complexes beneath Beijing and other major cities. Modern authorities claim they were built during the Cold War. But local records show they're far older. Ancient chronicles reference the cities beneath that existed thousands of years before modern China. Networks of tunnels that connect to natural cave systems. Systems that extend for hundreds of miles. That no one has fully mapped. That local people still avoid. South American subterranean chambers. Throughout the Andes, beneath the Amazon, in places we're only now exploring with ground-penetrating radar, there are voids, chambers, structures, underground complexes that predate known civilizations, that local indigenous peoples speak of in whispers, as places where their ancestors hid when those who came from stars walked the earth, Europe's sealed cave complexes. From Scotland to Romania, from Spain to Poland, there are caves and underground structures that were deliberately sealed. Not naturally blocked, sealed, by humans, from the outside, with massive stones, with walls built across entrances, with symbols carved as warnings, with burials placed at entrances as guardians, as if something inside needed to stay inside. Different cultures, different languages, different belief systems, different technologies, same behavior, same design principles, same defensive architecture, same fear. The implication is chilling. What if ancient humanity wasn't hiding from each other? What if the underground cities weren't built to protect against human threats? What if they were hiding from something that no longer hunts openly, that no longer walks in daylight, that learned to stay hidden when humans emerged from below, but never left? Never disappeared. Just adapted. If underground life was safer, why did they return to the surface? If the cities provided protection, why didn't humanity just stay below? Why didn't we become a subterranean species? Why didn't we abandon the surface world entirely? Because hiding is not living. Because humans need sunlight, need open air, need space, need the ability to see stars and feel wind and grow crops in soil that breathes. Because extended underground living causes physiological changes. Vitamin deficiencies, bone density loss, psychological damage, depression, madness. Because the threat diminished, or changed, or learned, or withdrew. Something shifted. Whatever hunted humans on the surface either left, or died, or went dormant, or found other prey. The danger didn't disappear. It receded, like a tide pulling back. Leaving humanity cautiously, nervously, desperately hoping it was safe to emerge. Or perhaps our ancestors took a calculated risk. Perhaps after generations underground, the choice became clear. Stay below and slowly die as a species. Or emerge and face whatever might still be waiting. Some risks are worth taking when the alternative is extinction. Some gambles must be made when staying safe means slow death. But not before humanity learned something important. Something we've spent millennia trying to forget. The world is not always ours. We are not always the apex predator. We are not guaranteed survival. We are not entitled to the surface of our own planet. Sometimes survival means disappearing. Sometimes the smart choice is to hide, to go silent, to make yourself small and invisible and hope you're not noticed, to build cities underground and pray that stone and darkness are barrier enough. Derinkuyu still exists, still open to tourists who want to descend into history, still descending into darkness that feels older than civilization, still containing spaces no one fully understands. Still hiding secrets in sealed passages and unmapped chambers. And the most unsettling question isn't whether something hunted ancient humans. The archaeological evidence suggests something did. The design of the cities makes no sense otherwise. The global pattern of underground refuge indicates a worldwide threat. Something that drove human populations underground across multiple continents. The unsettling question is this: if something was dangerous enough to force entire civilizations underground, to make tens of thousands of people choose darkness over daylight, to make hiding beneath hundreds of feet of stone feel safer than living on the surface, what made them believe it was safe to come back out? What changed? What signal did they receive? What evidence convinced them the threat had passed? And were they right? Or did they simply become desperate enough to risk it? Desperate enough to gamble that maybe, just maybe, whatever hunted them had finally gone away? Or did they emerge and discover that it was still there? Still watching, but changed, adapted? No longer hunting openly, but still present? Still observing? Still waiting for us to forget why we once hid? Because here's what we know. The cities were used in cycles, abandoned, then reoccupied, then abandoned again. as if the threat appeared. Disappeared. Appeared again, a pattern stretching across millennia, which suggests whatever drove humans underground didn't leave permanently. It came and went, followed some cycle we don't understand, some pattern we haven't recognized. And if it followed a pattern then, why would that pattern have stopped? Why would we assume that whatever made our ancestors flee underground has permanently departed? What makes us so certain that the cycle has ended? That we're safe now? That the ancient fears were just primitive superstition? This has been Whispers from the Dark, Season 2. I'm Raven Vale. Some cities are built to be seen, monuments to human achievement, declarations of power and permanence. Others are built to be hidden, concealed from enemies, protected from discovery, and some are built to hide us. Not from other humans, but from something else. Something that made our ancestors willing to live in darkness, to raise children underground, to accept burial in stone rather than risk the surface. Still there. Still waiting. Still patient. Because whatever made ancient humans flee underground had one quality we've never fully understood. Patience. The ability to wait. To watch. To let generations pass. To let civilizations rise and fall. To let humans forget. Until we forget why we built the cities below. Until we forget why our ancestors hid. Until we forget there was ever anything to fear. And then we're on the surface, unprotected, unaware, having destroyed our refuges or turned them into tourist attractions, having sealed the entrances or forgotten where they are, having convinced ourselves that ancient fears were primitive superstition, while something that waited for thousands of years waits a little longer. Still, watching, patient, learning from its mistakes, adapting its strategy, waiting for the moment when we've forgotten completely. When the last person who remembered the old stories has died, when the warnings have faded from memory entirely. And maybe that moment is now. Maybe that moment is coming soon. Maybe that moment has already passed, and we just don't know it yet. Maybe we're already being watched. Maybe the cycle has already begun again. Maybe the silence is just the pause before something starts moving. Waiting.